Krishna Pranamora Yugalakisha Radha Krishna Pranamora Yugalakisha.
Adi Leela, Chapter 15. All glories to Lord Gaurachandra, and all glories to Lord Nityananda. Kindly offer me your lotus feet, so that I may hold them in the inner recesses of my heart. All glories to Lord Gauranga and his associates. One achieves devotional service to the Supreme Lord just by hearing the wonderful pastimes of Sri Chaitanya. The Lord continued to perform his pastimes as a scholar without anyone detecting his real identity. He rose early each morning, performed his daily religious duties, offered obeisances to his mother, and went to teach his students. Mukunda Sanjay was an eternal servant of the Lord, and his son was Purushottam Das. He was so fortunate that the Lord went to his house every day to teach. Nimai would sit alone in the courtyard in front of the temple of Durga, and gradually his students would assemble. Occasionally, some student would forget to mark his forehead with Urdapunda Tilak. As the propagator and maintainer of Sanatan Dharma, Nimai felt compelled to protect the conditioned souls from deviating from the path of religion. Therefore, he never neglected to rectify his students when necessary. He would chastise the forgetful boy to such a degree that the student would acquiesce in shame and certainly never again forget to apply his tilak. "My dear boy, I see that you have not put on tilak. What is the reason for this?" demanded Nimai. "The Vedic literature says that the forehead which does not bear the mark of tilak is as good as a crematorium. I can also understand from this oversight that your brahminical practices have been rendered useless. Go home and perform your brahminical duties again, and then with tilak on your forehead, you may return to the school." In this way, the Lord taught all his students to maintain the proper standards of brahminical and religious practice. The Lord did not modify his arrogant spirit, nor did he spare anyone his criticism. Whoever was negligent was eligible for the Lord's strict correction. Nimai's character was always exemplary. He never made jokes or laughed in the company of women. In fact, he kept his distance from women and avoided meeting them. Nimai especially liked to taunt and find fault with the residents of Srihatta, imitating their peculiar pronunciation. The infuriated residents of Srihatta would retort, "O Lord, which land do you hail from? Tell us where your father and mother and their descendants come from. Which one of you was not born in Srihatta? You yourself are a descendant of Srihatta, so why do you make such fun of us?" The more they tried to chastise the Lord, the more fun he had imitating their pronunciation and making jokes at their expense. It required little provocation to infuriate them further, and occasionally one of them would chase the Lord. The chase was usually futile, for the Lord could not be caught easily, and ultimately the angry fellow would simply stomp the ground in frustration and shout invectives. Occasionally someone managed to capture him and drag him to the local Muslim magistrate to register a complaint. His friends would arrive in time to pacify the angry parties and reach some mutual understanding. The Lord would also search out the house of a person from East Bengal. He would break in, destroy the foodstuffs, and run away in mock fear. In this way, he created havoc in Navadvip, but he never had any one incident which involved women. He never even looked at a woman. In this incarnation, the Supreme Lord did not even hear the name of a woman. Therefore, those realized souls who are fixed in the scriptural conclusions never glorify Lord Chaitanya as Gauranga Nagara, the Lord in the mood of a paramar. Although every kind of eulogy is applicable to the Lord, knowledgeable pure devotees glorify the nature that the Lord manifests in a particular incarnation. In Navadvip, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Nimai Pandit, the scholar. The Lord of the Vaikuntha planets enjoyed his transcendental activities as a teacher in the house of Sri Mukunda Sanjay. All his students sat around him and he taught them with great pleasure. Sometimes he pretended to have a headache and ordered medicated oil massaged into his head. Then he continued his discussion, submerged again in his intimate spirituality. From early morning till afternoon, he taught his students and then went to the Ganga for his bath. Then again, from early evening to late evening, he continued his discussions and teaching. If any student studied under Nimai for a year, he left the tutelage as a full-fledged scholar, well-versed in scriptural conclusions. While the Lord was absorbed in his activities, Mother Sachi constantly thought of the Lord's marriage. She searched all of Navadvip for a daughter-in-law suitable for her Nimai. Sri Sanatan Mishra was a pious and charitable Brahmin, a benevolent and pure-hearted devotee of Lord Vishnu. He lived in Navadvip and engaged himself in serving guests and assisting less fortunate people. Born of a noble family, he was truthful and self-controlled. As a scholar, he earned the title Raj Pandit, and as a gentleman in Navadvip, he personally maintained many needy people. Sanatan Mishra's daughter was like Lakshmi Devi in beauty and character. As soon as Mother Sachi saw her, she was convinced that this girl was the best choice to be her son's wife. From early childhood, the young girl bathed regularly in the Ganga 2 or 3 times a day. She was dedicated and obedient to her parents, and she had no other interest than devotion to Lord Krishna. Every day when she met Mother Sachi at the bathing place in the Ganga, she humbly offered her respects. Mother Sachi reciprocated and blessed her, saying, "May Krishna bless you with a suitable husband." But as Mother Sachi bathed, she thought, "This girl should marry my son." Sri Sanatan Mishra and all his near relatives were equally eager to have the Lord as a son-in-law. One day, Mother Sachi sent for Kashinath Pandit and told him, "My dear sir, I have a proposition. Go tell the Raj Pandit that if he so desires, he may offer his daughter's hand in marriage to my son." Kashinath Pandit proceeded immediately to Sri Sanatan Mishra's house, repeating the Lord's name in silent joy. When the Raj Pandit saw Kashinath Pandit at his door, he immediately offered him a seat with due respect. "What brings you here, my dear sir?" asked Sri Mishra. "I have come with a proposal, and if you so desire, I will reveal it to you," replied Kashinath Pandit. "You should offer your daughter Vishnu Priya in marriage to Vishvambar Pandit. I think it is a perfect match. He is a divine personality, suitable in all respects for your daughter. Your daughter, who is chastity personified, will be the best for him." Vishnu Priya and Nimai Pandit remind me of the divine couple Krishna and Rukmini. So perfectly suited they are for each other. Raj Pandit disclosed the news to his wife and near relatives and waited for their advice and comments. Unanimously, they agreed, "What is the need for further debate? This is a perfect proposition. Quickly make all the necessary arrangements." The Raj Pandit happily replied to Kashinath Pandit, "I have decided to marry my daughter to Vishvambar Pandit, so I will proceed with all the arrangements. If the Lord desires, my family and ancestors will be greatly blessed by this marriage for my daughter. Kindly go to their house and tell them everything. I am fully in favor of this marriage." Sri Kashinath Pandit was extremely satisfied with the outcome of his mission, and he promptly told Mother Sachi everything that had transpired. Mother Sachi was relieved that everything had gone smoothly. Without wasting further time, she began the preparations. Nimai's students were jubilant when news of his marriage reached them. A rich gentleman named Buddhimanta Khan immediately offered, "I shall bear the cost of the entire marriage." But Mukunda Sanjay objected, "My dear brother and friend, if you take all the responsibilities, then what am I supposed to do?" "Listen, my dear friend," said Buddhimanta Khan, "I will not allow this marriage to become another poor Brahmin's wedding. I will make such arrangements for Nimai Pandit's wedding that everyone will think a prince is getting married." Adivas, an important ceremony before the day of the marriage, was held at an auspicious time amidst great joy and festivity. The area set aside for the actual marriage ceremony was decorated with colorful hangings around the sides and across the tops. Water pots with intricate designs, ghee lamps, grains, yogurt, and strings of young mango leaves were all around. Different auspicious ingredients required for such an occasion were placed on the floor, which had been beautifully designed with colored rice paste. The Vaishnav devotees of the Lord, the Brahmins, and all the gentlemen of Navadweep attended the auspicious occasion. Invitations had been sent to all of them requesting them to attend the feast in the evening of the day of the Adivas. By early afternoon, the musicians had already arrived and began to play. Loud and melodious sounds of mridanga and other drums, shanai, and cymbals were carried in all directions. The priests began to chant the Vedic mantras, and the ladies ululated, adding to the festive mood. The crest jewel of the Brahmin race, Nimai Pandit, seated himself in the midst of the Vedic chanters. The priests and the Brahmins around him felt a surge of joy in his presence. Different objects required to formally receive the guests were brought to Nimai Pandit. He garlanded the respectable gentlemen with flowers and applied sandalwood paste on their foreheads, offering each of them a betel nut and betel leaf according to the custom of the time. The Brahmin population in Navadweep was large in those days, so countless gentlemen came and went with no one keeping track. Some amongst them were very greedy and returned again and again, mixing with the crowd and pretending they had just arrived in order to receive another gift. Having received invitations, people came from distant localities and were unknown to each other, but despite such anonymity, there was a strong festive spirit. The Lord was in a joyful mood, and he played the perfect host. "Give all the flower garlands, sandalwood paste, and other gifts to the guests at least three times," ordered Nimai. "Do not think about the cost. Just give freely to everyone." The greedy Brahmins, who were endeavoring to take the free gifts several times, were suddenly checked and felt ashamed because of the Lord's generosity. The Brahmins were dear to the Lord, and he wanted to protect their religiosity. Some men were committing offenses by deceitfully collecting extra gifts. Therefore, he gave the instruction to give the gifts three times to any person. After receiving the gifts three times, no one wanted any more. They were satisfied. No one amongst the milling guests knew that the flower garlands, sandalwood paste, and betel leaf they had received were actually expansions of Lord Anantashesh, serving his master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nimai Pandit. The profuse distribution of gifts, some flowers, sandalwood paste, and betel leaf fell to the ground, and the quantity of those remnants would have sufficed for five opulent weddings, not counting those gifts which were taken home by the guests. Every visitor was impressed by the arrangements and left the wedding praising the opulence of the ceremonies. Even the wealthiest men of Navadweep were impressed, for their fathers had not spent so lavishly for their weddings. The profusity of flowers, sandalwood paste, betel leaf, betel nut, and other gifts had never been seen in Navadweep. Raj Pandit Sri Sanatan Mishra was extremely happy. He and his close relatives attended the Adivas, laden with valuable gifts. At an auspicious moment, he joyfully applied tilak to the Lord's forehead, just as the Vedas recommended. The excitement of the moment was heightened by the loud chanting of Lord Hari's name, accompanied by the musicians and the ululating ladies. Having completed all of his ceremonial duties, Raj Pandit returned home. The relatives of Nimai Pandit then went to Raj Pandit's house to perform the same Adivas ceremony for Vishnu Priya. Whatever was customary for a marriage in those days was performed in the midst of great festivity. Early the next morning, the Lord went for his bath in the Ganga, and on returning, he went directly to the temple to worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Thereafter, he sat with his close relations to offer obeisances to their forefathers for their satisfaction. The festive mood was maintained by the musicians, dancers, and singers performing loudly enough for everyone to hear. Every corner of the house was decorated. There were beautiful designs on the floor, water pots, grains, yogurt, lamps, and strings of auspicious mango leaves hung everywhere. Colored festoons fluttered like flags in the wind, and the air was filled with festive excitement. The chaste ladies of Navadvip accompanied Mother Sachi while performing all the customary and traditional rituals. First, they went to the Ganga for their bath, and then, followed by musicians, they visited the village deity Shasti, where they prayed for her blessings. From the temple, they visited the house of different relatives and then returned home. She distributed koi, bananas, oil, betel nut, betel leaf, and vermilion to the ladies who had accompanied her and satisfied them in every respect. By the will of the Omnipotent Supreme Lord, there was no dearth of anything, so Mother Sachi generously distributed her gifts to the ladies several times over. Not a single lady was dissatisfied. They happily rubbed oil on their bodies and bathed. Lakshmi Devi's house was also in a state of great excitement. Her mother bustled with happiness. Caught in the waves of ecstasy, Raj Pandit spent lavishly and offered his daughter wholeheartedly to Lord Gaurasundar. After completing all of his rituals, the Lord sat down to rest, and from that place he humbly distributed food and clothes to all the assembled Brahmins. He offered respects to each person according to his position and gave in charity to satisfy each person's need. The Brahmins blessed the Lord and returned to their houses fully satisfied. In the afternoon, the relatives came to dress Lord Gaurasundar for his marriage that evening. They decorated his entire body with sandalwood paste and applied aromatic perfumes on different parts of his body. On his forehead, they drew a half-moon-shaped tilak with sandalwood paste, placed a beautiful crown lightly on his head, and draped his neck with fragrant flower garlands. A fine, expensive silk dhoti was tied expertly around his hips. It shone golden yellow, like the setting sun. His pink, lotus-shaped eyes were smeared with kajal ointment, black as the bumblebee. He held the auspicious three-bladed grass and the pit of a banana tree, while exquisite and expensive golden earrings swayed from his ears, and other valuable jewelry decorated his upper arms and his neck. Each of the relatives decorated the Lord according to his own taste, hanging different types of jewelry on different parts of his body. Men and women both marveled at the Lord's exquisite beauty. They forgot themselves, fixed as they were on the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Almost an hour before the time of marriage, the relatives decided that the Lord should proceed to the house of the bride. "Let us begin the journey," they announced. "For an hour, the bridegroom will parade through the town before arriving at the bride's house." Budhimanta Khan appeared suddenly with a beautiful palanquin. The musicians started up afresh, and the priest began chanting Vedic mantras. Singers, dancers, and guests all joined in a jubilant clamor. The Lord first circumambulated Mother Sachi and offered her respects, then offered respects to the Brahmins, and sat on the palanquin in the midst of the joyful confusion which included the ululating ladies. It was early evening, and the marriage procession went first to the bank of the river Ganga. The waxing moon hung nearly full above their heads and shimmered in the water of the Ganga. Hundreds of lamps were lit and music played on with undying enthusiasm. In front of the Lord's palanquin were two long rows of Sri Budhimanta Khan's estate employees followed by the festoon holders bearing colored flags. In their midst were the jesters, joking and evoking laughter. There were a variety of dancers performing many different dance styles, while the countless musicians played at least five kinds of drums, cymbals, conch shells, flutes, bells, kettle drums, and a variety of horns. Excited young children danced amongst the musicians, and caught in the festive atmosphere, even older people abandoned their reserve and joined the children, while the Lord smiled at the happy sight. On the bank of the Ganga, they stopped for a while, singing, dancing, and playing the instruments before proceeding to the bride's house. After offering flowers to Mother Ganga, the entire procession turned towards town. Whoever witnessed the parade was struck with wonder at its opulence. "I have seen many extravagant marriages, but I have never witnessed anything like this one before," said one person. The residents of Navadvip were fortunate to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person as he swayed past them in his palanquin. The Brahmins who had beautiful unmarried daughters in their homes all lamented, "It is a great pity, and certainly my misfortune, that I could not give my daughter in marriage to this handsome young man. But what can I do? I offer my obeisances at the feet of all the residents of Navadvip who witnessed this transcendental, joyful pastime of the Lord." After the procession had passed through all the different localities of Navadvip, they arrived at the house of Sri Sanatan Mishra, the Raj Pandit. Everyone came out of the house, ululating and making other loud sounds of welcome for the procession. Raj Pandit came forward to receive the Lord from the palanquin, helped him step down, and took him inside where a seat had been prepared. The joy Raj Pandit felt was indescribable, and the love and respect he felt for the Lord was visible on his face as he escorted Nimai Pandit into his house. He showered flowers on the Lord as a blessing and welcome. The reception party from the bride's side consisted of relatives and priests who came forward with fine clothes, jewelry, and other precious gifts for the Lord. The bride's mother placed the auspicious three-bladed grass on the Lord's head and then worshipped him with seven ghee lamps. At that time, Lakshmi Devi, who had been dressed exquisitely, took her seat. The relatives of Nimai Pandit were both impressed and satisfied to see such a beautiful bride. They lifted the Lord onto his seat according to the marriage ritual. They hung a curtain around the Lord, and Lakshmi Devi circumambulated Sri Gaurasundar seven times. Then, facing him with folded hands, she offered her respectful obeisances. The relatives threw flowers on the couple, and the air filled with loud music and the ululations of the ladies. Lakshmi Devi placed a flower garland at the lotus feet of the Lord, offering him her life and soul. The Lord picked up the flower garland and, smiling sweetly, placed it around her neck. Again, the divine couple was drowned in a shower of flower petals. Unseen by the common men, demigods like Lord Brahma also showered flowers on Sri Lakshmi Devi and Sri Gaurasundar. Lord Gaurasundar's group competed with Lakshmi Devi's group in showering flowers and making joyous sounds. Absorbed in the contest, everyone forgot their own cares and worries. Sometimes the Lord's side seemed to be victorious, and at other times Lakshmi Devi's side seemed more enthusiastic. The Lord was pleased to see everyone enjoying himself in such a wonderful way. Thousands of lamps shed bright light everywhere, and the loud and joyous sounds of song and instruments filled the sky. By the time the moment came for the bride and bridegroom to exchange glances, the universe seemed inundated by tumultuous and joyous sounds. Then the divine couple sat down, and Raj Pandit sat with them to officially offer his daughter to Lord Gaurasundar. In the midst of all rituals and chanting of mantras, the marriage began with Raj Pandit offering his daughter and praying for the Lord's pleasure. Along with his daughter, Raj Pandit also gave nice cows full of milk, land and property, beds and furniture, maids and servants, and other valuable gifts. Lakshmi Devi sat on the left of the Lord as the Brahmins lit the fire and began the Homa. After all the customs and traditional rituals were complete, the bride and the bridegroom went into a well-decorated reception room. Raj Pandit's house was transformed into Vaikuntha, and the guests came in to enjoy the marvelous feast. Countless people came and all left fully satisfied. The newlywed bride and groom spent the night in Lakshmi Devi's house amidst great joy. The happiness Sanatan Pandit felt cannot be described. He reveled in the same inconceivable good fortune which befall great sages such as Nagnajit, Janak, Bhishma, and Jambuvan, who also became the fathers-in-law of Lord Krishna or Lord Ramachandra. The divine couple passed the night and next morning till midday in Sanatan Mishra's house. Then the Raj Pandit and his relatives bid farewell to Lord Gaurasundar and Vishnupriya. In the midst of music, kirtan, the blessings of the Brahmins, and the chanting of mantras, appropriate for such a journey, Nimai offered his respects to the elderly members of his father-in-law's family and left with Lakshmi Devi on a palanquin for Sachimata's house. The people they met on the way all blessed them and congratulated them. Ladies spoke respectfully of the good fortune of the bride, saying, "She is very fortunate. She must have worshipped Lakshmi Devi for many births." Others commented, "This couple is just like Lord Shiva and Gauri." Still others said, "They must be Lakshmi and Sri Hari. They are Cupid and Rati, or Indra and Sachi, or they must be Ramachandra and Sita Devi." Truly, the good fortune of the residents of Navadweep is unfathomable, for they were able to see the Supreme Lord and his eternal consort. Such was the extent of their piety. The whole of Nadia was blessed, and the residents experienced unrestrained joy by being able to see Lakshmi Devi and Lord Gaurasundar Narayan. Finally, the divine couple arrived in the house of Mother Sachi. Accompanied by other ladies, Mother Sachi went out to jubilantly welcome the divine couple into her house, where she seated them amidst joyous sounds and music. How can one express the joy Mother Sachi and everyone else felt at the presence of Vishnupriya and Gaura Hari? So magnanimous is the Supreme Lord that one becomes completely free from all sinful activities and their reactions just by looking at the transcendental luster of the Lord. Moreover, he becomes eligible to enter the spiritual sky, the Vaikuntha planets. Everyone from all walks of life could see the Lord and his spiritual effulgence. Therefore, he has been called the most compassionate, the only friend of the fallen souls. Nimai Pandit freely distributed clothes and gifts to all the performers, dancers, and the beggars who had come to the house of Mother Sachi. To the Brahmin relatives and friends, he gave sufficient gifts to satisfy himself as well. To Budhimanta Khan, the Lord gave a tight and affectionate embrace, leaving Budhimanta Khan in indescribable ecstasy. According to the Vedic literature, there is no end to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Those divine activities which transpired in only a few houses cannot be described by hundreds and hundreds of years of discourse. As for myself, I am simply giving brief descriptions, and that only by His mercy. I am unable to fully describe His wonderful pastimes. Whoever hears or reads these transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord can certainly reside in Lord Gaurachandra's eternal association. Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu are my life and soul. I, Vrindavan Das, humbly offer this song at their lotus feet.